This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. No matter what your political leanings, you've got to admit that while still in his 20s, the accomplishments piled up by today's guest have been impressive. As a commentator and blogger, his insights are frequently sought out by the political left. His skills as a web developer have been put to use in such varied locales as Virginia Quarterly Magazine, the University of Virginia's Miller Center, and most recently, the Obama White House. And on his own, he's been creating internet tools anyone can use to peer into the inner workings of government. This last one is where we may put most of our focus. After all, thanks to this man, you can now, with a few clicks of your mouse, get easy-to-understand translations of what laws state legislators are creating, or gather a host of info about anybody who visits the White House. But with Waldo Jaquith on hand, no topic is off-limits, and you're certainly welcome to bring up anything you'd like right after the news. I'm Tom Graham, and this is Virginia Insight. What would you like to know about the inner workings of government? What strategies have you tried in the past in order to locate that type of information? How'd that work out for you? Attempts to decode our government is where we are starting this hour. Although with today's guest, it's always possible that a number of other fascinating topics will come up as well. And you are welcome to join the conversation with your questions, comments, stories about your own experiences. 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone. On Facebook, we are listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. He is the creator of several websites and internet tools designed to make it much easier for everyday people to access information for free about various aspects of American democracy. Waldo Jaquith, welcome back to the Insight Studios.
I'm glad to be back.
So good to see you again. How was your time at the White House?
Fun. Yeah. I will miss being able to introduce myself to anybody who crosses my field of vision and say, I'm Waldo Jaquith, I work for the White House. Because really, there's a very limited slice of time where you get to introduce yourself like that. It was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it a great deal. And I wouldn't be surprised if I went back at some point.
And there is a story about how you ended up working at the White House for about 6 months on ethics.gov, and we'll get to that. But tell us first what ethics.gov is, why it was created, why you think it's important.
When President Obama was candidate Obama back in 2007, 2008, he made many promises. That's what people do when they're running for the presidency. And one of his promises was to create a website that he termed ethics.gov that would take data about ethics and government. So you're looking at a lot of the intersection between money and power and attempt to put it all online. And specifically what he promised is you'd be able to type in the name, somebody's name, and hit search and be able to find all the records. Particularly, he cited campaign finance law, who gives money, who gets money. Lobbying records, who's registered to go to Congress and represent businesses or special interests or whatever, and who visits the White House. So this is a promise that was made that the White House turned out to have a very difficult time fulfilling. And the reason is this data didn't just cross agencies, but it included data from both Congress and the White House. Well, Congress doesn't want to help the White House. So it politically became very difficult. So somebody with some sense there said, let's get somebody just naive enough to think that this is doable. And they got me and said, you know, open government, you just come do this. And not being in any way what you might call a Washington insider, not having a whole lot of experience with federal open government, my experience is state level, I just barged right into it. And I didn't have the self-importance necessary to think that I could just pick up the phone and call the Department of Justice and say, hey, could I have your data, please? I'm used to being the outsider where I go to their website and figure out how to extract the data that I want. And so that's what I did. And by God, it worked. And I think from their impression, like, I'm just a really clever go-getter, whereas that's the only way I've ever known how to work, because I've never been able to call up a government agency and ask for help. I just got to figure out how to do it. So I stumbled through it the only way I knew how and somehow emerged looking like I knew what I was doing.
So this new site, ethics.gov, it actually went into operation fairly recently.
Yeah, I think it launched. I wrapped up at the end of February, and it was no more than a couple weeks later that the White House announced ethics.gov, and it was promptly overwhelmed with traffic. I don't think we'd anticipated that there'd be quite so much interest in finding out who's doing what in Washington.
So if anybody's listening on the radio by their desk and they have a computer next to them, or you're listening online on your computer, you may be tempted to go to ethics.gov right now, and that's certainly fine. I just want to let you who are listening know that Waldo has promised a little bit later in the show to walk us through. He's got his laptop here. Walk us through some of the experience and the how-tos and what you can get of some of his different websites, including ethics.gov and Virginia Decoded. And we'll try to make it so that anybody who is by a computer as they're listening can follow it, and anybody who's not anywhere near a computer can still get a sense of what's going on.
Challenge accepted.
This journey that ended up at the White House and may take you back there again in the near future started in many ways because of something that apparently came to you many years ago, like 2006 or so, and that became Richmond Sunlight. And if there's anybody listening who's familiar with your work, Waldo, they're probably most familiar with Richmond Sunlight, but there's some people who are not. So tell us that story.
So I'm going to offer a preface to this that goes back even farther, something that I haven't mentioned to you. An earlier project in high school, I wanted to put the Charlottesville code online. I'm from Charlottesville. And I convinced the clerk of court, and I couldn't tell the story before because the clerk of court was still the clerk, and I didn't want to get her in trouble, but she's not the clerk anymore. I convinced her to give me a copy of a three-ring binder that contained the city code, which was $100. I didn't have $100. You know, I'm 16 years old. I don't have $100 to do this. But, you know, I knew that the copy of the Charlottesville Code at the library was totally out of date, and it was frustrating. I wanted to look at the laws because I was and am a big dork, and I knew that it would be better for these to be put online. So I couldn't get an electronic copy. That just wasn't a thing. You know, this is, 1994, I guess. So I knew that if I could get the printed copy, I could somehow scan it in. Now, scanners were not hugely commonplace then, and I certainly didn't have one, but I hadn't gotten that far in my plan. So I spent a few weeks carting around this heavy binder of all the laws in Charlottesville in my backpack, begging the use of page-feeding scanners from local businesses. And over the course of months, like, I gradually got most of this scanned in as Word files. And then I hand the project off to somebody else, which ultimately ended in failure for the problem that I had a copy of the code as it existed in that week. But they keep changing it. Like, you can't just do that, because then what you have is a very accessible, incorrect resource, which is a really important lesson. Like, if I'd actually managed, if I'd actually gotten the whole thing up and finished online successfully, it would have been immediately useless, but also actively harmful. So lesson learned. Some years ago, I guess it would have been about 2005, I wanted to know what my legislator, Delegate Rob Bell, who's my representative in the House of Delegates then as now, as well as Senator Cree Deeds as my representative in the state Senate, I wanted to know what they were up to. And so I just wrote a bit of code that would go to the state legislature's website, and once an hour, it would check on the status of all their bills and send me an update. I thought, well, this seems useful. I bet other people would like this. So I just put a little page up on my website to do this for any legislator. And it got out of control from there. Over the next couple years, I slowly added on to it until I finally realized, like, this should be its own website. So I took a whole summer and spent all my evenings and weekends. At this point, newlywed, no children. So it was viable to do this sort of thing. And built the website, became richmondsunlight.com, that just crawls over the entire General Assembly website, which has really wonderful information that is really hard to access. I'm sure their website was very exciting about 1998, but it hasn't really been updated since in any meaningful way in terms of design or layout or structure. So it just takes that stuff and puts it on my website in a way that makes it much, much more accessible.
So to add some what I think of as meaning to the stories that you just told us, we really have to go back a little bit. As I understand, when you were 15, even before you started on what turned out to be the failed Charlottesville project, so we're back to like 1993.
That's right.
Was when you first began experimenting with developing websites. And in all the years since then, in all the different types of websites that you've developed and all the different types of tools that you've developed and that you use, including the one that probably left several listeners' mouths open, as it did me just a moment ago when you talked about creating something that would every hour go and grab information out of Richmond and tell you what your state legislators were doing. All of this is self-taught. You never went to school for computer science or web development or anything. This is stuff that you just taught yourself to do and you end up at the White House doing.
I did, but I don't get much credit for it because I grew up with the technology. I appreciate that to somebody, you know, you can imagine a time traveler from 1970 looking at a six-year-old navigating Facebook and saying, this child is a genius. No, this child never took a class in this Facebook. She just knows it. Well, yeah, but, you know, she grew up with it. You know, the web in 1993 was 2 years old, in less than that, really, in the popular mind. There was still a magazine I subscribed to called Boardwatch that would list every month all the new websites, all of them. They were all in the magazine. So you wanted to know, like, oh, there's a new fan site about Tori Amos. This is indeed exciting. It was a very different web back then. So to grow up with the web from there and to learn it as I went, well, I'm just part of a mini generation, the Gen Y that did that.
Okay, so you're in your early 30s now.
I am, yep.
Would it be your estimation, Waldo Jaquith, that anybody else who's age 32 or 33 listening could be doing all the stuff that you're doing about grabbing information about what's going on in government and having it automatically arrive at their computer every hour?
If they'd started when they were 15. And remember, too, that for me, this is a hobby. You know, some people paint, some people knit. I like to make websites. And so open government is an excuse to make websites about things that are valuable to others and that I enjoy. But I just as easily could have spent all the time obsessing over playing piano. But I'm not very good at piano, so, so I didn't do that.
So to you who are listening, how much of a participant do you feel that you are in American democracy? Were you at all startled to hear that upwards of 80% of eligible voters took part in the recent national elections in France? What do you think it would take to get that kind of turnout here? Might the online tools our guest has been creating, helping people more easily track the inner workings of government, persuade more people to get involved? 888-WMRA Talk is how to reach us by phone. That's 888-967-2825. On Facebook, find us listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. Political activist and web developer Waldo Jaquith is our guest. Waldo, you've been known for many years now from your blogs and your commentaries as having a quite liberal point of view on politics, national, state, local. Did you have to step aside from your what I think of as political activism in order to work at the White House?
I did not have to. No, and I should mention that I think I'm liberal by a lot of Virginia standards, but I do own a motorcycle, several guns. I enjoy shooting, hunting. I'm big on the Bill of Rights, and I think to a lot of my friends in the Northeast, I'm a dirty conservative. So it is a matter of perspective. But in the Virginia vein of things, yes, I am absolutely a liberal Democrat. Nothing was asked of me. In fact, after I got the position, I was asked by Anish Chopra, then the U.S. Chief Technology Officer. He asked me, are you a Democrat? Just in passing. Like, I already had the job. And I said, well, yeah. He said, oh, I didn't know that. Like, it was just not even an item of interest. And I decided that, you know, I have a personal blog at Waldo.net that I've written for, 16 years now, I guess, where I've often written about politics. And I decided that it would be intellectually dishonest to attempt to write in any way about politics while working for the White House. Like, how can I write in any way meaningfully about the people who are issuing my paycheck? Like, that doesn't make sense. So I decided that for the duration that I just wouldn't write about politics. It just seemed dishonest.
Okay, so what we're going to do when we get back from the break is open up your Apple computer, do a little bit of typing, describe to people listening what you're doing, and then walk us through some of what now is available online to anyone for free as a result of some of your recent projects, as well as talk about some of the new projects you got coming up. And anybody who has a question or comment is welcome to join in at 888-WMRA-TALK. Waldo Jaquith created a free online tool called Virginia Decoded that allows anybody to access a host of information about what proposed legislation has become law in the state and what hasn't. Easily determine just what the language in those laws actually means, and in some cases even connect to videos of state lawmakers debating over those pieces of legislation. The John S. and James L. Knight Foundation was pretty impressed with this creation for Virginia, so that they've now made him a foundation fellow and put him to work creating similar websites for state legislative codes across the nation. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Phone number if you want to participate in our discussion about discovery of what's really going on in government, 888-WMRA-TALK. So of these different websites, Waldo, that we've been talking about, you want to start with the one you did for the White House or the one that you created on your own for Virginia?
Let's start with the White House. That's okay. A fun one.
So this is ethics.gov. Mm-hmm. And to get to it, all anybody has to do is search or type in
ethics.gov. That's right.
And it's going to come up with a connection to data.gov. But don't be confused.
No.
That's just sort of the way the government works. It is really the ethics.gov website.
Well, there is, I hasten to point out, a whole family of websites developed by the White House called data.gov, and it's their ongoing effort to take government data and make it broadly available in great detail. So ethics.gov is really just one more facet of the much larger and very impressive data.gov platform.
Okay, so we've typed in either to Google or right in the URL, ethics.gov. We've gotten your site. Describe a little bit of what we're seeing.
So what you see right up front is the ability to search by entering the name of a person, whether it be a person you want to know if they've given money or a congressman you don't want to know if they've received money, any individual who you want to know where they fit in a federal ethics data. You can also browse the data and read some background on the website.
And that's right in the big box on the center of the page, but there's lots of blue and white and red and even a picture that looks like an American flag waving, but you only see part of it. And some nice other graphics. Did you create the graphics or did you just create the tools that connect the information?
I was involved in everything, but I have to say that a lot of these individual graphics came from the White House's very impressive team of website developers. So I came up with some nice ideas and they said, those are great. Here's how we do things at the White House. You're going to need more American flags on this.
All right. So you can't necessarily take credit for all the pretty pictures, but now this all-important search box right up near the top of the
page.
That's right. Is where you can type in anybody's name and found
mm-hmm.
it?
Yep.
Okay. So pick a name and tell us why you're picking it.
Sure. I think a great example is Hillary Rosen, a name that some listeners might recognize. There was a kerfuffle that developed, a week or two ago, after this woman had said in an interview that Mitt Romney's wife had, in a discussion about women working outside of the home, had never worked a day in her life. And that got the Romney campaign very upset, and there was a whole argument over what that meant and so on.
And but Hillary Rosen was identified as a Democratic activist and
that's right.
a supporter of the president.
And so one of the questions that emerged immediately, of course, is, well, what are Hillary Rosen's ties? So I think this is a good way to see, at least in terms of what the data on ethics.gov will show us, what her ties are. So her name is Hillary, spelled with just one L, Hillary, R-O-S-E-N. And if I run a search on her name, it'll crank away for a few seconds, and it gives a few data sets that it finds her name in. It's searching a handful of data sets, but it's going to find information about her in the White House visitor logs, that is, in the record of all the people who have visited the White House. It's going to find records of her in lobbyist data, that is, who has been paid in order to represent interests. And in her case, she worked for many years as the head of the Recording Industry Association of America. And in that capacity, she was paid a great deal of money indeed to lobby. And then the third set of records that you see is campaign finance data. You'll see that there are 50 campaigns to which she has given money in order to support their campaigns.
And now we are hooked up to an internet service through James Madison University. And we had to go through some hoops ahead of time to get you logged on to my password. And I noticed that for some reason, this website is not working as fast as it was before. So I don't know if JMU has decided that, that I shouldn't be allowed to be password connected to two websites at the same time. But describe to us what we saw when you went to
of course,
this
sure.
before.
So on that... on the set of results of White House visitors, so that's a really interesting data set. That's something that the Obama White House took some positive steps to do that no White House had done before, which is to release records of the millions of people who visit the White House every year. And many of those people are just taking public tours, but some of those people are meeting with the president. And they refuse to release some of those records. They classify them as security risks, for instance. But most of those records are released. And so you can see every instance in which Hillary Rosen has visited the White House. And as you browse through that list, some of them look exciting at first. Like there's an instance where she's recorded as meeting with POTUS, President of the United States. But as you scroll through the list, you see that she was one of hundreds of people to meet with him. And it's actually part of a big event on the South Lawn of the White House.
So it lists that she's there with 387
other
people.
It lists
people.
How many people she's there with, who she met with, the room that she was in, the date and the time she entered, the date and time that she left. It's all tracked by the Secret Service, and that all goes online.
Tells you whether she has made contributions to any political national campaign.
Yeah, any
Congress
federal
or the
campaign.
White House, how much she's made, who she's made it to. Mm-hmm.
And she's made a lot of donations, as it turns out. And as I scroll through the list here... You can see that they're overwhelmingly Democrats. All the names of candidates who I recognize right off the bat are Democrats. So not only do we see that she seems to have pretty regular access to the White House and access to some pretty high-ranking officials there, including Valerie Jarrett, one of the presidents.
Yeah, I was going to say, one of the things that you clicked on, Valerie Jarrett's name came up.
Yeah.
And what is it telling us?
That she had a one-on-one meeting with Valerie Jarrett. And that, I mean, that's some real access right there.
One of the president's closest.
Yeah, I forget exactly what her title is, but she's, you know, it doesn't get any closer to the president than Valerie Jarrett. So through this means we can see, well, she does seem to have some real ties to the White House. Through her contributions, we can see that she is a major donor to the Democratic Party, or at least to candidates for the Democratic Party. And for lobbying records, which was the third data set that came up, we can see that she has received a great deal of money to lobby on behalf of the recording industry to convince Congress to vote particular ways.
Political activist and web developer Waldo Jaquith is our guest. You're welcome to join the conversation at 888-WMRA Talk by phone or to post to us on Facebook where we are listed as Virginia Insight. First to Edinburgh, Jim, thanks for calling in. Your question or comment, please.
Well, first, Waldo, thank you for doing something that just encourages people instead of bad news all the time. Anyway, can you help on Freedom of Information request? Years ago, I made one and didn't send it certified, and it was just asking the CIA if they had any connection, financial or otherwise, with the Washington Times, a newspaper. Never got an acknowledgement of receipt. I'm just wondering what are the foolproof ways of having a Freedom of Information Act acted on?
Well, I'll confess two things up front. The first is... I'm surprised. Well, I shouldn't be surprised. I've ceased to be surprised how often people will use one of these tools that I've put together for open government and emerge actually depressed. Like they say, geez, I didn't know things were this bad. I didn't know that people gave so much money or that people visited so many times. So it's been sort of a litmus test as to what you're looking for and what you found, I suppose, is if you walk away feeling optimistic or pessimistic. I was feeling very good about myself until I heard from more and more people that it was kind of a downer, but I'm glad to know you feel differently. My second confession is that my experience with open government is in Virginia. I have very little experience on the federal level. And in Virginia, I have had very good experiences from people who I know who work in open government circles on a federal level. They can scarcely believe how good things are in Virginia. I used to be a member of the board of the Virginia Coalition for Open Government, which, by the way, is an organization that I think you might be helpful to get you an answer to your question here. VCOG, as it's known, is an organization that exists just – it's a private organization funded mostly by media groups in Virginia to facilitate access to open government and to answer questions from people just like you about things just like this. And of course, their expertise is state, but the woman who heads it up, Megan Ryan, is certainly no stranger to federal open government. I think what you'll need to find is somebody with experience with national intelligence agencies, because I bet that somebody who's familiar with this will say, ah, no, you got to send it to this address and you got to put this guy's name or this department's name in the envelope and that'll work. I don't have that sort of experience, but good for you for even seeking that sort of information. Most people would never have the nerve to or even know that they could make such a request. And I hope you won't drop it. I'd hate to see you be discouraged from seeking useful information because you got what is, I think, all too frequently happens, no response from the federal government.
And what was the name of the Virginia group?
It is the Virginia Coalition for Open Government.
Thank you.
And they there's a phone number, there's an email address. They welcome, they exist for questions exactly like yours.
Great.
Jim, thanks so much for your call, and please stay tuned. It would not surprise me if there's somebody in the audience who's tried something similar to you and found some other ways to jump through the right hoops, may call in and share their experience with us and give us some information you can use. So anybody listening who would like to try doing that, helping out in any way as we talk about creating more open government, whether you've got a specific answer for Jim or a general point to make, the phone lines are open at 888-WMRA-TALK. Again, thank you, Jim. Now to this post on Facebook from Trey, who says, a lot of us are really thrilled to hear about more open government. I'm wondering if Waldo would share any stories of cases where he's run into resistance to this idea.
In the spirit of open government, Trey's a friend.
So he probably knows that you've had some experience.
I'm not sure he has heard this story. I'm not sure, but I think it's a very good one. I was speaking at a conference about a year ago to an open government group where I was asked to talk about open government. I was speaking to a group wanting to learn about open government, but they work for state legislatures. And so they're political appointees to state legislatures. And I gave my standard talk about the importance of open government and explaining some of my websites. And the questions that I got for the front, I talk about this sort of thing a lot, were uniformly and openly hostile to open government. They thought it was a terrible thing and it's a big waste of time. People just want information that's none of their business. And that websites like mine were really the problem. And how, what suggestions did I have for less open government?
And were these government employees you're talking to, lobbyists,
they
business
were
people?
Government employees who worked for state legislatures who were political appointees. And there's a big distinction there because there are the career bureaucrats, I mean that in the best use of the term, who are really, in my experience, just dedicated to open government compared to the political appointees for whom it's very inconvenient because that's their boss, that somebody wants information. And I say this as a former political appointee myself. Their job is often to provide political coverage for their bosses. And it was eye-opening. And I've been told of groups like this. I've been told of this perspective, but I guess I've lived such an insular experience of talking to people who are enthusiastic about open government that was astounding. It was quite an experience.
In terms of other aspects of Trey's question about running into resistance as you push for these kinds of internet tools that allow anybody for free to find out much more information about what's going on in their government than we've had access to before. Are there other ways that you've run into resistance, or have you been surprised at times at the ease of with which you get access?
Almost all of the time, the response that I get is eager assistance. And this is when approaching particularly employees of the Virginia government, employees of the state legislature, the Virginia Code Commission. For all of these websites, I usually have some half-baked idea that isn't very good for a website. And I tell a few people about it and I put it together badly. And then friends who look at it say, oh, no, you can do this much better. Here's what you should be doing. Here's the real market for this. And I get something that seems pretty good until I go to the government entity that's the source of the data. And they say, well, that's pretty good, but you know what you could be doing. And so that's what makes these websites so useful is, in fact, the not just that they provide me with the information that I want. They know the information that I should be asking for, and they give me that instead, even though I asked for something else. The flip side story is that I put video of the legislature online, and they don't put video online. In fact, they wouldn't provided at all, even live up until a few years ago. And so it turned out that I could buy the DVDs of what the legislature did. They'll sell them to you for $10 a piece. And it's really meant for legislators themselves. They want to get it on DVD to put on TV commercials and stuff of themselves talking before the legislature. And so I went to the Senate and said, I'd like to buy all your DVDs, please. And they said, wow, yeah, sure, we could do that. And I went to the House and they said, probably we'll get back to you. And I was told, no, you cannot have them. And I was told, not by them, but by other people in the legislature, that the leadership in the House did not want me to have the video. So I had to go to the Virginia ACLU, who came to the National ACLU, who went back to the House leadership and said, you're going to sell them these DVDs. And they said, we're going to sell them the DVDs. So I don't quite know I don't know who said no. But my experience ever since then with the House and Clerk's office, House and Senate Clerk's offices has been just wonderful. So I don't know who told him not to do it, but in the 5 years since, it's gone flawlessly.
He is the creator of such user-friendly government information websites as Richmond Sunlight and Virginia Decoded. He is also the principal author of the new Obama administration website, ethics.gov. Waldo Jaquith is our guest. My name, by the way, is Tom Graham. This is Virginia Insight. And if you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you at 888-WMRA-TALK. I'm curious, Waldo, if you see the type of websites that you've been creating as having an effect on what kind of ideas actually make it into law. I mean, is there sort of a ripple effect from people having more easy access to what's going on in government?
I wish I could tell you. I don't have the faintest idea because I don't have an alternate reality in which my site doesn't exist to be able to compare it to. So I get lots of nice stories, and I see legislators responding to discussions on Richmond Sunlight and saying, well, actually, you know, here's why I introduced this bill, or here's what it's intended to accomplish. But whether or not I'm doing any good, I don't have the faintest idea. I'm having fun. So I feel good about that much. And I've certainly found plenty of instances where people say, I never would have known about this bill had I not had this website, had I had not these tools. I wouldn't have been able to be aware to support this or oppose this. And legislators as well tell me that it helps them understand better what's going on in the General Assembly. But am I doing any good? I don't know.
So Richmond Sunlight, just to back up a little bit for anybody who's just recently joined us, is the site that you created first. It went online like 2006, 2007?
About January 1, 2007.
And the way it works is it basically grabs any information, mostly from different news organizations or legislative websites, about what's going on in our state legislature, our General Assembly, and automatically posts it to this site, and it's very easily navigatable for people to search for different information on different topics. And then there also is kind of a blog page. Well, anybody can make comments, and there have been some Waldo comments at some length about the appropriateness or inappropriateness of your view of certain things going on in Richmond. So it's very much an informational site as well as a participatory site.
There's a page for every bill that's before the legislature every year, which they wrapped up just last week, finally, their budget session this year. So on any bill, anybody can post a comment, and they have debates and discussions there. And I participate them in those just as surely as anybody else because I want to. Just because it's my website, I don't feel like I should be exempted from being able to have debates on there. And we'll get thousands of comments throughout the session.
And then Virginia Decoded, which has been a project over the past couple of years, which just recently went online in a way that anybody can access it. And you're still developing it. It's kind of beta testing, I guess.
Absolutely.
Is what you're in the middle of. That will allow people to pretty easily track anything that has become law.
Yep.
And how it got to be there. We have some people on the line. We're going to get to your calls when we get back from this one-minute break. Charlottesville-based web developer, blogger, and political activist Waldo Jaquith is our guest. One of his newest creations, the ethics.gov website that he spent 6 months developing for the Obama administration. This is Virginia Insight. I'm Tom Graham. Susan's calling us from Lexington. Thanks for doing that. Susan, your question or comment, please.
Yes, thank you. I have a question about information in Virginia when there's been a change in administration like we just recently had. I had done a FOIA request and was told looking for calendars actually specifically for Marilyn Tavener, who had been our Secretary of Health and Human Services and is now running CMS, and was told that that just was really, really difficult to get and that it would be extremely expensive to make that FOIA request and have it fulfilled. And we were also asking for some specific digital documents, things that probably had been scanned. Have you had an experience with that with an administration change, or do you have any suggestions for someone that is trying to make a FOIA request for documents from a previous administration?
And Waldo, when Susan says FOIA, there's a good part of the audience that knows sure. that she's talking about the Freedom of Information Act, FOIA, but not everybody. And Susan also mentioned another set of initials for a particular agency, but Susan, I wasn't clear what that was.
I'm sorry. I was talking about Marilyn Tavener, who was Virginia's Secretary of Health and Human Services.
Health and Human Services. Okay.
Right. But she's also now running CMS, which is Medicaid, Medicare.
So with that clarification, Waldo?
I can only join your lament, I'm afraid. It's funny you ask about this because the section of the code that I'm about to talk a little bit with this other website here is an exclusion to the Freedom of Information Act. There are so many exclusions to the Virginia Freedom of Information Act as to make it pretty easy to refuse to comply with requests. There is certainly a host of reasons to say no. And as you know, one of them is for them to say it's just too difficult. And sometimes the reason it's too difficult, you might say, you know, I just want all this person's emails to this other person over this time frame. And they can say no because we have a terrible and inefficient email system and it's impossible for us without taking lots and lots of time to give you all those emails. Well, it's not your fault that they store things really badly, but it can end up actually being a benefit to them insofar as they can hide information that you might otherwise want to be public. This is very common. This is very frustrating. And my only suggestion to you is unfortunately the same as with the last caller who asked about FOIA, which is that the Virginia Coalition for Open Government, you're just not going to find a better collection of knowledge on this topic. Also, there is a FOIA board in Virginia. It's an official government organization that deals with complaints and requests about people saying, I've made a perfectly legitimate request. It was turned down for reasons that I don't agree with. I want you to review this and tell me what my recourse is. So that I think you have two good options here for the first being to go with the non-governmental group to VCOG and the Virginia Coalition for Open Government and see what they think. And the other is potentially on their advice to proceed to the FOIA board and say, what's going on? Why can't I get this information? With the understanding that because this is political in nature, that is, you're trying to get information from a political appointee and it's information that is from somebody who held a different position before, it becomes so much easier to throw up obstacles. I can only say I share your frustration and say that a lot of people suffer along with you and hope that one of those two organizations can help you.
Can I ask one more quick question?
Sure, Susan.
The Department of Behavioral Health and Disability Services has recently, as a result of legislation that went through the General Assembly, not this session, but the session before, has begun a website. They are the only organization that has been not posting licensing and investigation reports for residential facilities for children. We have a huge issue in Virginia with children being abused and raped and just terrible, terrible situations. Every other state organization posts that. Department of Behavioral Health just started it, and I think created an incredibly inefficient system. It doesn't seem to work as well as anybody else in the state, even though they got $50,000 to do it from Governor McDonald. Any suggestions that we might point them towards if I made a contact with their board on, hey, here's how you might do it better, or here's who you might talk to? If you're looking up a facility, they list the facilities by whatever name they want to be listed by. Oh. And so if you have a facility where you're checking, considering about placing a child there, want to know if there's been any abuse, as an example, they have Liberty Point in Stanton, Virginia. If you look that up, you can't find it because it's listed under PSI with their office being in Charlottesville or Richmond. So no one would ever look that up.
We've had the exact same problem in Charlottesville. There was a same sort of facility in Charlottesville that they would change their name every couple of years, every time they got caught and convicted.
It's the same. It's the same company, and they were owned by Psychiatric Solutions Incorporated. Whisper Ridge.
That's Whisper Ridge. That was the one.
Facilities.
Yeah, they just change the name every time they get caught. They change their name,
right.
And
well,
they get new group of kids.
Right, they're finally being closed, and we had a lot of coverage. God bless the Virginia pilot, the Richmond Times-Dispatch, and David.
But
Rath,
Susan, if I can get to the essence of Susan, if I can get the essence of your question, and then make room for some of our other callers,
sure.
It sounds to me like part of what you're saying is there a way to get some sort of uniformity in some of these state government websites so that everybody's on the same page about making things easy to search for? Is that part of what
right.
you're asking?
Some of them are great. I mean, Department
okay, Susan,
of
hold on and let me. I'm sorry, I do have to let you go soon so I can get
sure.
to some of the other callers. But Waldo, you have a comment on that aspect of Susan's question?
So I have an answer that is both accurate and not entirely helpful, which is that this is why what's known as bulk downloads are so important. Because agencies can have terrible websites, but the data is good and you have to get it out somehow. And so the best thing to do is for them to have a link to say, click here to download a spreadsheet of all of this data. The second best thing is for you to ask and say, can I have a bulk download of this? Now, that gets you the data. That doesn't help other people. But that's how I got in this racket in the first place, is by requesting these bulk downloads of data, such as legislative data from the legislature's website, and putting them up on my own website. So this is the particularly unhelpful part of my answer. I'm guessing you're not a website developer, and you're not looking to make a website to provide this data in a better fashion. But I think that's basically all that most of us individual citizens are left being able to do, other than asking them to please do better.
Susan, thanks so much for your call. And to you on the other side of your radio, when you are searching for information online, what tools do you most often use? Google? Siri? Something else? How often does your search for something about government include maybe what an elected official is doing or about some type of new legislation under consideration? And when you're looking for those types of things, how successful do you feel those searches turn out? 888-WMRA-TALK is how to reach us by phone, 888-967-2825. Or if you prefer to type instead of talk, you can find us on Facebook, listed as WMRA's Virginia Insight. George took the telephone route from Afton. George, thanks for joining us. Your question or comment for Waldo Jakewith, please.
Yes, first, kudos to Mr. Jakewith for doing such good work.
Thank you.
I was on unemployment for a while, and then I got off unemployment, and after the fact, I was told that they had decided that I had to pay them back $5,000, which I'd received during a period. And then they changed the bill so that people who are now getting unemployment and also getting Social Security do not have any deductions made. So it's similar to saying that they repealed the death sentence, but we're going ahead and kill everybody that we sentenced previously. I know that they must have knuckles under to some pressure, and I'd like to know how to bring pressure again.
It's certainly outside of my area of expertise. The only pressure I know how to provide is by agitating, whether it be whenever I've had to deal with a larger systemic problem like that. All I can do is complain to radio hosts, as I might right now, letters to the editor, the usual. But in the realm of open government data online, I don't know that I have anything to offer you there.
Waldo, George, this is directed at your question, so hang on if you would. Many, many years ago, when I was in high school, long before you, I spent my non-school time working for a state legislator and a little bit also for a member of Congress, a U.S. congressman. And I was astounded, you know, we're talking well more than 20 years ago, the degree to which the staffs for both spent almost all of their time working on constituent problems.
I'm so glad you mentioned that.
And I also was sort of amazed that the degree that anybody, you know, a guy who worked as a day laborer someplace or was, you know, a businessman or a lunch counter lady, anybody could call up with a difficulty they were having with government and the staffs would always do their best to help them. I think that people often think, well, if I call my state legislator or I call my congressman, it's only the people who've made big donations or had
lots
of influence.
That's what they're there for. Yeah.
So you're absolutely right. Is it your impression that that's the same thing all these years later?
Oh, absolutely. So much of what they do, I mean, that's how they get reelected, is good constituent service. That is very good advice, and I'm awfully glad you're here to say that, because that'll go a long way. And
well, I emailed my legislator and I've not received an answer. I don't know if you'll hear
that. And I would also say that in my experience, George, emails are generally the least effective method of communication.
Legislators have an alarmingly small regard for emails.
Because it's so easy to write an email.
I mean,
if you
them,
take
like
the
a 100
time
to
actually
exchange
write a letter on a piece of paper.
Or show up in their office.
Or make a phone call.
Yeah.
Those things tend to be more effective.
And I do want to mention, just for listeners broadly, for folks who might have similar questions, if you want to find out who your legislator is, don't go to the State General Assembly site because it's wrong. They can't handle split precincts where some people are represented by one legislator and some people in the precinct are represented by another. Go to richmondsunlight.com. It's the most accurate source of that. In the upper right-hand corner, there's a who's your legislator link. I understand you already know who your legislator are, but for listeners who don't, I recommend taking that route. Good
Thank
luck.
You so much for your call, George. Yes, good luck. If somebody called right now, we might have time to get your call on the air. If you want to talk with political activist and web developer Waldo Jaquith, we've got a phone line open for you at 888-WMRA-TALK. So we've got the laptop working again. Tell us a little bit, walk us through how your Virginia decoded site works. First of all, how do we find it?
So it's at vacode.org. I just launched it a month ago. It's really, anybody using it is a guinea pig. It'll look funny in most web browsers. It might not be totally reliable. I like to call it up all up front. It's an ongoing test.
And but you also get to be a guinea pig for what you are now working on nationwide.
Yes.
The Knight Foundation has you creating these sites for state governments across the nation.
Yeah, I applied for funding and showed them the Virginia site and said, if you give me a couple years' salary, I will work full time on making this something that people can use in states around the country. So as Richmond Sunlight takes data from about bills and pops up a website based on that data, likewise, vacode.org, Virginia Decoded, takes the state code and does the same thing so that people can browse through the code and post comments and ask questions and see court decisions that affect that section of the code that you're looking at and all the bills that attempted to or succeeded in amending that section. The beginnings.
I can either Google Virginia Decoded, mm-hmm. and this is going to be the first site that comes up that Google lists, and then click on it and go to it from that. Or I can type in my URL, vacode.org.
That's right.
Okay. So we've only got a couple minutes left. Solve a problem for us on this page.
Sure. So this seems relevant to what we've been talking about. For somebody wondering, I filed this FOIA request for something with the state that pertains to health and social services data. And you want to know, well, where is that? So somebody searching for that hopefully would be recommended by Google to come to the site. Alternately, somebody browsing the code could go to the Administration of Government title, as it's known of the code, Title 2.2. And under that, there's the Virginia Freedom of Information chapter, Chapter 37. And that is all about the laws that regulate open government in Virginia. And one of those, with the arcane identifier of 2.2-3705.5, and a lot of my job ahead of me in the months ahead is coming up with a better system than this, somebody can browse exactly what the law is.
But you're losing me a little bit, especially for anybody who doesn't have a computer right next to them. And I have the advantage of not being able to see very well what this computer is doing. So describe to me, do I use some sort of search on your page? I search freedom of information and it takes us to the numbers that you were just talking about?
Sure. You know, there's many different ways. Somebody could run a search on the website, or somebody a little savvier could actually browse their way through the website to say, well, I'm interested in government, I'm interested in FOIA, now I'm interested in health and social services.
And there's also a place now where you can put comments about what worked on the site for you or how you'd like to see it improved.
I do encourage feedback.
And all of that feedback gets put into what gets developed nationwide, so that because of you making a comment now, somebody in Cincinnati or Los Angeles or Milwaukee may have a better site a few months from now.
And the website that people look at now, I think a couple years from now, I'll be back here and we'll be talking about it. And what I have here will look pretty pathetic compared to what I develop based on all the great advice that people give me.
Anne in Harrisonburg, I'm sorry that we're so short on time, but we do appreciate your calling, and I hope you can make your question or comment quick, please.
Hi. I really admire all the work you've done creating a more interactive public sphere. I'm wondering if you have any advice for other people who are interested in creating websites but don't yet know how to do things like write code.
Leave the question there and have Waldo respond.
There are actually some really great groups to help with that. This very weekend, from Friday through Sunday, I'm going to be at the Sunlight Foundation's Transparency Camp, they call it. And there are gatherings like this that occur regularly throughout the country, in fact, for people who say, I'm a great programmer, but I don't know about open government, or I'm really passionate about open government, teach me to program. So you might start by checking out Transparency Camp. I appreciate this weekend might not be good for you, but they do it regularly. So there are venues like that available.
So look online, even do a Google search for learning more about programming?
I would Google for Transparency Camp. That'll certainly get you in the right community. And the Sunlight Foundation, as it's known, is a really great group for getting plugged into that sort of thing.
And thanks so much for your question. Our guest has been Waldo Jaquith, principal developer of the Obama administration's new ethics.gov website, creator of the Richmond Sunlight and Virginia Decoded websites, and now as a fellow of the Knight Foundation working on similar free internet tools for decoding state governments across the country. Waldo, thanks so much for your time.
You're welcome.
You can find audio postings of Virginia Insight by going online to WMRA.org, then clicking on Programs, and then clicking on Virginia Insight. If you go to that page, you'll find links to more information about the work that Mr. Jaquith is doing. And if you go to the Virginia Insight Facebook page and click like, you'll get access to a bunch more information about these broadcasts there as well. Insight's executive producer is Matt Bingay. Our associate producers, Terry Ward and Bob Levicky. Some of our break music supplied by Robert Jospe and Inner Rhythm. Thanks so much for tuning in for this edition. I'm Tom Graham. Hope we can get together again soon for more Insight.